If you think you can't go from politics to the divide, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, I'm Carol Gold, and welcome to Above the Fray. We have a somewhat abbreviated show today. We'll be here for about 15 minutes, so let's get right to the subject matter. Steve, I want to, and Steve's here. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show, of course.
Hi, Carol.
Let's talk about Baltimore. There's a couple issues there that really disturb me, and perhaps the one that disturbs me the most is best said not by me, but by paraphrasing or quoting two African Americans who spoke out about this week. One is Colonel Alan West, former congressional representative from the state of Florida, and the other is Stephen A. What's his name? What is his name? Stephen.
The reporter Stephen A. Smith.
Yes, Stephen A. Smith. What Colonel West said, what former Representative West said, was that the poverty and the lack of quality education and the breakdown of the family are in our inner cities are the consequences of the Democrats' inner city policies that have created these conditions, because most of our large inner cities have been Democrat controlled for the last 40 to 50 years. And he said what we need to look at are the policies that created these conditions. At the same time, Stephen A. Smith said that the problem is that the African-American community keeps looking outward instead of inward. They keep looking outward to find cause for the effect that they're experiencing and where they are now, instead of looking inside themselves and inside the black community and say, what have we done or not done that has gotten us into this condition that we're in now? So these are African-American men, both of whom are established in their own careers, both of whom have public of sorts, have public pulpits in which they can express their opinions. And they point to a combination of really devastating Democratic rule for the last 40 to 50 years over these inner cities, creating these ghetto-like conditions and these dependency conditions that exist within the black community, including worsening conditions in those communities economically throughout the Obama administration. I was listening to statistics today, Steve, and I'm not going to quote them because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but essentially both for black African youth, the unemployment rate has gone up. The amount of black American youth in the workforce, the labor participation rate is down from prior to the Obama administration. The black community in general, above young adult age, also down. Home ownership down among black America in the last 7 years. And so, again, these are, I'm paraphrasing two African Americans who have a lot of credibility, in my opinion. The issues are both a combination of Democrat policies and, as a Jew, I want to throw this into the conversation, Steve. You know, Jews have been oppressed forever, for as long as we've had recorded history. And I can speak as a Jew in what I was taught growing up, which is when you're not wanted somewhere as a Jew, when you're not treated properly, you don't continue to stay there or bang on a door that won't open. You go somewhere else and you prosper. You do better. You don't demand of people who don't want to see you advance that they allow you to advance. You don't ask for them to compensate you. You don't ask for them to in any way make up for what you've experienced in the past. You simply educate yourself more and you go and do better. You know, like the expression, the best revenge is living well. It's very much a philosophy of Judaism. And so I don't see black America doing that. Not that there aren't African Americans who are educated, doing well, and have come out through ghetto conditions and made something of themselves. But these rioters in Baltimore, they're not rioting against what happened in Baltimore, because we don't even know yet what happened in Baltimore. There's news today, Steve, and I'm going to turn it over to you in 1 minute. I know I've covered a lot here, but there's news today that another arrestee who was in the van with Freddie Gray said that he was throwing his body against the van trying to hurt himself. So maybe he severed his own spine. Maybe it wasn't police brutality. But just like hands up, don't shoot, Black Lives Matter, it never happened, but it caused riots across the country. And Baltimore is spawning riots, and maybe it never happened either, police racism or brutality. So with that, Steve, I know I threw a lot at you. We've got about 10 minutes left. Go ahead. Pick it up.
All right. So I'm going to give a few things that you touched on. The first thing that I think you hit the nail on the head. Baltimore has been ruled since 1968 by a Democratic rule in the mayor's position. All the councils, city council, state, the city councils, everything, all the school boards, the police, they're all under Democratic control. The city is, 66% black, if the last numbers that I looked at. So essentially a Democratic-ruled city. The state, since 1968, I believe, has only had two Republican governors. So essentially you have Democratic rule and you have a Democratic rule by the governorship as well, for the most part. And you have essentially a black community. So you have a black community rioting within a black community. So the whole notion that the blacks are they're rioting over some injustices. Well, they're rioting. They are the majority. They're the ones that are actually setting the table, setting the policies of what is getting legislated there. So I find it hard to believe that they're rioting. When they themselves are the ones that have the power of the vote to elect and to govern themselves in any manner that they see fit. So I find it highly dubious that this is taking place. That's the first point. The second point that I find quite interesting also is that they're beginning to, the early reports are from, that they've done on some of the rioters are some of the same rioters that they found in Ferguson. They've been able to go through some of the social media accounts. They've been able to go through some of the email addresses from some of the people that have been at these things, and they're finding some similar coincidences from the same rioters in Ferguson to the same rioters in Baltimore. So people are beginning to speculate that there's an element that this was planned and coordinated, and the events of this poor man's death was the impetus to start the riot. So it looks like this was planned. And the last point that I think, it's a little bit off topic, but it does make sense. I finished a book yesterday by a gentleman by the name of, it's called Smart Cuts, and I had a great story about Dave.
Wait, Steve, you went too fast. What's it called?
It's called Smart Cuts, and it's basically a business book, but they had a chapter on a book by a gentleman named Dwayne Edwards. Have you ever heard of his name?
No, I haven't.
He is the leading soccer shoe designer in the world. He came from Inglewood, California, essentially a horrendous upbringing. No father, six siblings, no money. And what he did, starting from, the seventh grade up, he designed sneakers every day. Every day he would draw a sneaker. And he basically drew for years and years and years. By the time he was 22, 23, he finally got his first job. He worked all the way up. He became the head designer of Nike, and he's the man that ultimately became responsible for designing all the Michael Jordan shoes. He's created billions of dollars in sales through his sneakers design, and he now, in turn, is taking – he now has a school that teaches sneaker design and shoe design to other people. And his biggest lament was that there's no really minority representation in the sneaker world. So my point of me telling the story is that there's always options, and there's always hope, and there's always things that people can do. And for something like this, that to say Baltimore is hopeless, who would ever thought a guy drawing sneakers every day becomes one of the leading designers of the world? But it just goes to show you, with effort and time and persistence and patience and love of a craft, that you can get out of these situations. And like you, going back to your first original point, there are always options for people. That you said that there, you have to look internally, not externally. If you always look at externally to your circumstances, yes, there's always injustices, not only on a global or local level, but on a personal level. We always have slights and injustice that happen to all of us, but it's one of those things that you can't focus in on, but you just try to make your life better in every way you can.
Well, I think that when you have 40 years of a certain kind of governance that has created a real dependency population existing on less than a decent quality of life and being totally dependent on the government for resources and for finances, essentially, through subsidies and programs, at some point, people tire of that, even if they have to own that they were complicit in how it happened. And the point I'm trying to make is that I don't doubt that the African-American community in the inner cities throughout this country, I don't doubt that they are ripe for manipulation, that they are ripe for incitement, because they have been pushed into a dead-end situation. The problem, it seems to me, is the refusal to put responsibility for where that dead-end situation came from. And I think it comes from a combination of what Stephen A. Smith said and what Colonel Alan West said. It is a combination of refusing to look inward and say, no matter what circumstances I'm in, if I'm clever enough and think enough and I'm determined enough and want to work hard enough, I can get myself out of this situation. A refusal to do that, a refusal to take personal responsibility, and then a refusal to put responsibility where it belongs, which is with the Democrats that have ruled these cities for 40 or 50 years and created these conditions while they continue to get reelected over and over and over again simply because there's a D next to their name in the voting booth. I mean, maybe I'm naive, I don't know how there's anybody in this country who's conscious or semi-conscious, who's not in an intensive care unit, who doesn't see the corruption within the political system, particularly within the large cities. And again, that belongs on one shoulder, and that's the Democrats. I mean, you and I don't play partisan on this show, but you can't get around that reality. When they've been in charge for 40 or 50 years and the problems are endemic, they've created, maintained, and not solved the problems. So this is a huge Democrat problem, and yet there are black people, and there are white people too, who will go to the polls yet once again in 2016, and they will vote party. And to that extent, we are our own worst enemies. Steve, 2 minutes. You have something you want to say?
Yeah. I think the Democratic Party, and let's call the Republican Party as well, they offer these promises. They offer these handouts. If you vote for me, you'll get these things. And the reality is, it never works that way. Nobody can promise you anything in life. And let's call it is, nothing has been delivered to anybody. Nobody gets anything. And the only thing that's been delivered to them has been cheaper housing and welfare and food stamps. I mean, who wants that as a gift? But they hold that out as a carrot to the black community instead of empowering them and giving them opportunities. I mean, let's use the most basic example. The educational system is run by the unions, and it basically their jobs are the unions. There's not education taking place there. It's job security for the unions that back the vote. So
yes, and Steve, let me jump in because we've only got a minute left, and take that one step further. The unions then turn around and they make their members contribute to election campaigns, and then the unions give the money where they want to give it, and then the unions collect favors when they want it, and when the minimum wage goes up, as they're trying to do now, the union contracts are tied to the minimum wage. So when the minimum wage goes up, union salaries have to go up. So the unions there arguing for minimum wage when, in fact, minimum wage ultimately kills jobs and hurts young people the most because the low-end, low-paying jobs go away because employers can't afford increased minimum wage. And, boy, with 30 seconds, that's a topic that, you know, needs a lot more time. And I'm sorry for the abbreviated show tonight. That's actually my fault. I thought we had a 60-minute show. I only scheduled 15. So maybe Steve and I will give you another 15 minutes before the week's out, and if not, we'll be back Monday night. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Above the Fray. I'm Carol Gold, and I'll sign out for Steve Clark, I'm signing out for you. Bye, Steve. Good night.
Bye.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.